Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, Tom, if someone played your ex in a movie,
oh,
who would it be?
I'm going to shoot for some brownie points.
Oh, okay.
Because she would, if she's listening, she would love me to say
okay.
The, and there is a resemblance, the model from the 60s, Twiggy.
Oh.
What's her name? Leslie Lawson, something like that. She would. So, yes, I'll answer Twiggy.
That's
pretty little
flattering.
Blonde. Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. As I said, brownie points.
Look,
I'm never going to cash these brownie points in because we don't have contact anymore. I don't see her. But if she listens and hears me say that, brownie points up the wazoo.
See, we're
too brute.
Yeah, look, we were sort of talking about this off mic and I was like, what's a celebrity that's like a really smarmy guy with a super punchable face that everyone likes at first and then doesn't?
So we went through names were being thrown around the room.
Went with both of the Franco brothers. We were like, Zane thought that he was talking about James Franco and I was talking about Dave Franco, but like after party sleazy Dave Franco. But I think we ended up settling on, like, after going through a few different, do you watch American Horror Story?
I've seen early iterations of it,
so
but not all.
In the later seasons, there's a guy who literally plays the Antichrist.
Okay.
Called Cody Fern. And I'll show you a picture. That is sort of a picture. And I reckon like even the hair is sort of a little bit like the particular ex that I'm talking about. He literally played the Antichrist though. So he's got enough cred for the role of playing my ex-boyfriend, I think. Welcome to Ghosts of Boyfriends Past. I'm Liz Best.
With a bemused Thomas Harris. Hello, everyone, and hello, all.
And it is a main episode today, which means that we have a guest. Now, I'm quite excited about our guest today. I found her because somebody sent me an article that CNN had written about this woman. And thank goodness she is quite a renowned comedian because I was able to track her down quite easily and email her to ask her to come on the podcast. So we have Scottish comedian currently living in New Zealand, Samantha Hannah. Hello, Sammy. How are you?
Kia ora. I'm well. How are you both doing?
Good. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. It's a little bit later at night there than it is here. After reading your story, and I'm not going to give any spoilers away like off the bat, I just was like, I could read this story out on the podcast, but how great would it be if I could actually get her to come on and tell the story herself? So thank you for saying yes so fast.
Absolutely. It's a good one, dear readers. So kick back in your recliners there or however you enjoy this little show, because Samantha's brought a good story all the way from Scotland, landed in New Zealand. So they're in our neck of the woods for ease of recording, which was convenient.
And she's actually got some comedy shows coming up. So what we'll do is we'll get you to plug the heck out of that at the end of the podcast, just to make sure that everybody goes who is in New Zealand to buy a ticket to see this show. So without giving away the title of the article, because I feel like that gives away a lot, and I just want to let us, you know, unfold as it happens. So you in 2018, I think the article said that this sort of started. So give us a little bit of an intro as to where your life was at the start of this whole journey.
Yeah, so I feel like the meat of the article probably starts around 2018, as you say, but it really started, the actual story kind of started 2017. And before that, I was in Australia. So I was in Australia and then I went to New Zealand and I was doing a working holiday visa and I was 30. I was kind of like at the last age that you could be at before you could take a working holiday visa. And I'd had a tragedy in my life. I'd lost my brother, and a small amount of money had come through to me from that. And I thought, I'm just going to use this to go out into the world and do something. I quit my job in London. I booked a one-way ticket to Australia. I got my work and holiday visa. Had a great time, traveled around, really regressed quite a lot, I would say, during that time. Yeah. Partied a lot, met a lot of lovely people. And then I went to New Zealand and started kind of doing the same thing over there. And I'd given up comedy 5 years before, but kind of wanted to go back to it. And I thought, well, if I'm going to go back to it, I want to write a show that is reflecting how my life is at the moment. And whenever I was going online and looking at friends back home, people I knew back home, it was always the same kind of updates. It was that we've bought a house, we're having a baby, we're getting married, all those things.
I feel so, that in myself right now.
So I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm at a ski field in the middle of Australia partying every night, or I'm in New Zealand. I don't know what I'm doing in Queenstown. Just kind of reliving my youth a little bit.
Mm.
And I thought, well, what would happen if I made a decision to go, right, I'm going to find someone, but I'm going to find him in a year. And I decided I'd write a show called How to Find a Husband in a Year. Very tongue in cheek. It was a silly little, I'm not really going to do this. I'm going to see what it's like when you bow to societal pressure. And so I'm going to set up a Tinder profile. I'm going to put on it, I'm looking for a husband in a year. Does anyone either want to come and watch the show? I'm probably going to write about this, or be my husband. And I just started swiping on everyone, just saying yes, 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 yes. And then all the matches that came in, I'd have conversations, I'd sometimes go on dates, and I'm just banking this material. Like, this is going to be a show one day. And that's kind of the beginning of the story. Yeah.
That is one thing that we say on this podcast a lot, is that every bad date is a good story. Everything advances the plot in some way, or at least provides a humorous distraction. So do you have any of the terrible dates that you went on during this time?
I feel like I've blocked a lot of them out mentally. I remember some of my messages I got were pretty bad/brilliant. Like you've just said, that's my philosophy as well. I always think things are either going to go A, well, which is great, or B, badly, but you'll get a story out of it. Mm-hmm. So it's always a win-win. So that's how I live my life. And so every time I'd get this awful situation, I was like, but it could be funny, which, you know, in retrospect, it's probably not a healthy way to live your life. I'm not advising that for anyone, but at the time,
it's a little bit dangerous, but it could be funny.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, it might get a bit of material. So I don't think that's the healthiest way, but that's where I was at that time, right? And so I remember one of the messages I got from a guy in, I think it was in Queenstown at the time, and it was just like, oh, are you a fan of Lord of the Rings? And I thought, well, it's fine, you know, I'm in New Zealand, I'll just say, yeah, it's a good trilogy. And he went, excellent, because I'm an orc upstairs, but a hobbit downstairs. No. And I was like, I don't know what that means.
I think Tom's trying to figure out what that means.
What does that mean?
Very hairy feet.
Oh, okay, that's a more polite way of what I was thinking, to be honest. That's the family-friendly version of what I was thinking.
Indeed, and that's what I was angling for.
And a terrible person, right? Because the orcs are the baddies.
Yeah, orcs, if that's what you are up to, if that's your front-facing persona, no thank you, my friend. No.
And I said to him, I was like, does that line normally work for you? And he's like, well, you got to stand out somehow.
But
there was also a trend going on at the time. I don't know if it's still the thing, but a lot of guys just having their middle finger up.
My god, is that a thing?
It was back then.
That would have immediately been
on a dating profile. Is this Sammy? Yeah. So
yeah.
No. Like who?
So yeah. Look, Albert.
That you're so cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I do that in photos with my friends, but I wouldn't put that out in public. Like, you know, no.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. And then there was a lot of, there was one guy that just had, he had a gun pointed at his own head. I think that was a joke, or I don't know. I just thought that was an interesting choice of profile picture.
Funny.
I know, it wasn't funny at all. I was just like, but because I was collecting them, so I think normally you would just wipe away and go, absolutely not. But because I was banking these.
Yeah.
So potentially using the show, because the show that I ended up doing back then had a PowerPoint presentation and stuff, and I'd put in my bio any interaction may be used for material. So I was like, perfect. I feel, I mean, I didn't speak to a lawyer, but I felt like I was covered.
Look, I mean, that's how we operate on this show. We just go, if we make some kind of disclaimer, that covers you legally for things, right? That's how it works.
And Sammy, on this show, we often talk about when you go on a dating app, figure out what you want or what you're there for, right? And you did that. You said, I'm going to find a partner in a year. And you put that on your profile, in your literature. What was the response to that? Did you get a lot of sort of feedback or response on the I'm here for a husband prompt, or was it pretty, I don't know, pretty well left alone?
No, like a lot of people hooked into it. I think because I made it clear that it was also for a comedy show, I feel like people were slightly intrigued by that. It wasn't just me sincerely saying, I'm looking for a husband in a year, which would have been terrifying. And probably no one would have said, well, probably some people would have, because there was definitely that person as well, like, I'll be your husband kind of straight away. And and so I definitely think it helped get different matches, because there was that, like, slightly, it was just a bit different. It was like a comedy element to it. So yeah. And also I was just saying yes to everyone. So I don't know if people realize how many folk they would have matched with, because they're making decisions based on what they want. But if you're just saying yes to everyone, then you're getting it all.
You get a mixed bag. It's a mixed bag, and you've got to sit through and pick through and see which ones you want to put. I'm going to have these, and these ones are not so much. Pass to the person.
And I'd always start a bit of a convo just to see how it goes, or respond a little bit, unless it was a weird message, and then I'd be like, nah, I'm out. And I wouldn't.
You just take the weird message, bank it, and immediately
move on. Yeah, pretty much.
Now, Sammy, eventually you got a message from somebody who was pretty far away from you.
Yeah, so I moved up to Wellington for a bit, and I was, in a backpackers, awful backpackers. I was kind of running out of money. My days of just living life on the edge, it was probably coming to an end, but I was like, I'll probably give up on this swiping thing. I'll just go in one last time. And I went in and I matched with a guy 12,000 miles away in London. Yeah, London, which is where I lived for 12 years. 12 years I lived there. And I lived one stop away. I was in, I used to live in kind of Southwest London. He was just like in the next tube stop along from where I used to live. And I was in Wellington, which is where he went to uni. So we were on.
What places and then matched?
Yeah, match. That's because nuts. He'd set his Tinder settings back to Wellington because he thought, oh, I might move back and I want to see what's there before I commit to moving back. Also, this is what he says. I mean, take this with a grain of salt, everyone else does. But he at the time was a data analyst, and he said he was trying to work out the algorithms of Tinder. That old chestnut. So he was like, yeah, I was just trying to work out the difference between London and Wellington. So there was also that. And I was like, whatever. You just paid the subscription.
Amount of people possible.
And the problem in New Zealand is such a small place. So when he was looking, it was mostly people that you're like, oh, I know them, or vaguely related to them. So you get to a certain age, you're like, there's not a lot there. But he saw my profile and he thought, oh, well, she went to uni in the UK, so she's probably from here, so that would work. And also, one of my photos was, because I'd just done a ski season in Australia and then in New Zealand, it was a picture of me up the mountain. I'm a horrible skier. I learned really late in life. I learned when I first went to work in one of the mountains. So that was just like, oh, that's a nice pic. Put it up. And he was like, oh, because he loves skiing and he's really good at skiing. So he was like, yeah, she's cool skier, or even might have been snowboarding. I think I did one lesson in snowboarding ever. So he was like that. But in my defense, he had a picture of him and a dog, and he didn't have a dog. It was like, you know, the classic, I'm with my friend's dog, let's get that for the Tinder. So we were both slightly drawn to each other for these things that were not completely true. But we started chatting. We just hit it off. He was funny, and he said, oh, the first message was, congrats on the match 12,000 miles away. How's the hubby hunting going for you? So I was like, all right, let's see where this goes.
So after you match, how often are you chatting in the first couple of days, weeks, months?
Oh, constantly. It was just every morning when I woke up, it was nighttime for him. So we were chatting then, and then he'd go to bed, and then there'd be like a little lull. And then when he woke up, it was nighttime for me. And then we would chat. Very, very quickly added each other on Facebook. So it's easier to chat on Messenger. And I was in Wellington. He's like, oh, I used to live in Wellington. Te Papa Museum's there. I can get you like a private, like, because a mate worked there. She's like, I can get you like a private tour. And I was like, oh, this guy's so organized. So, oh, so fancy. How nice is this? And so, and then I was like reminiscing about London because I'd lived there for so long. So we just had a lot in common we could talk about. And so, yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot of messages. Neither of us were working at the time. So that also added to it as well. So, yeah, it was a lot. But we were both kind of even. It wasn't like one of us. You know, I hadn't sent him like 50,000 messages and he sent me four or anything like that. It was pretty even spread across the board.
And Sammy, when you're sort of initially talking to someone online, you make a connection, a bit of long distance. Do you reckon that long distance helps? I don't know, facilitate conversation because
knowing that you don't have the pressure of having to meet up
on a date with this person, you don't have to sort of physically see them and or be confronted by them or anything. Do you reckon that in your case and for everyone else, is that an issue? Is that a consideration?
I definitely think it helped our situation, but I think maybe it's for a different reason. I think it's because if you can't meet up straight away, you need to take more time to get to know each other. So by the time you do meet up, you know so much more about them and you've built up a little bit of a story. Whereas if you say we'd been in the same city and we'd gone for a coffee, we probably would have had really surface level chat, thought, oh, we've got a few things in common, but not really. And then I would have kept traveling and he would have done his thing and we just would have moved on. So I think the reason that it became the way it did is because we had all of this time to get to know each other, find out about each other and build like a relationship before we ever met. So by the time that we later did meet, it was, you're all going to be in a much better position. And had we met straight away, I think it would have been like just different, not at the right time for either of us, because we were both in that kind of in between stage of our life. He'd also been going through a lot of changes in his life. So neither of us were, and I wasn't seriously looking for something serious. It was more for the show. That was just kind of a little bit in the back of my mind. Oh, I would like to meet someone soon. I didn't think I was going to meet someone through that show that I was writing. So yeah, I reckon it wouldn't have worked if we'd been in the same place.
So Sammy, I read in the story that his parents actually had a fish and chip shop quite near where you were staying. How did that come up?
Yeah, well, it wasn't actually that near. It was in Napier, which is quite a trek away from Wellington. But what happened is my friends were coming over from the UK to travel around with me. And I told him this and he looked at my itinerary and where we were going. And he was like, don't go that direction. Go via Napier because it's a lovely place. It's nicer than the route that you've chosen. Plus, my parents do own a chippy there. So if you wanted to, you know, you could stop on by. And I'm like, well, do you know, that does sound like, again, it could be quite fun for a bit. And why not? It does sound like a really nice place to visit. So we totally changed our route based on his recommendation. And we traveled up to Napier. In my mind, I thought that the chippy, I don't know, I didn't think it was going to be a chippy. I thought it was going to be more like a seafood restaurant because I knew it had a really, really high rating on Google. So I was like, this is going to be like a lovely by the waterfront situation. And so when my friends and I arrived, we had to get ready pretty quickly to go off to the, in my mind, this grand seafood restaurant. And because they were over from the UK and it was holiday, and I guess we're probably a bit more dressy back there than New Zealand's so casual, that we were like, well, we better really better make an effort. They could be your future in-laws. We never know. So we got really dressed up, got high heels on. I started trying to, we went in the wrong direction. So we ended up kind of running for an hour because it was going to close. Finally find this place and it was on an estate, no one in the queue has shoes on. It's not the kind of place that you would get dressed up. There's definitely no idyllic setting on a beach. And we got there and his parents just took one look at me and thought, oh, that must be the girl Toby told us, the guy I was chatting to. It's like, that must be the guy that he said he's a friend, because he didn't want to say, oh, I've just chatted to this girl on Tinder. So he's like, oh yeah, my friend might pop in. So like, I think that's the friend. And we just stuck out like a sore thumb. So his mum and dad were like, how can we get you anything? And I'm like, oh, I'll just have a, yeah, just fish and chips. We sat outside and we just ate our fish and chips. And I was like, yeah, that was weird. I think I need to stop doing all these silly things for the story now. Because
no,
just
always move
far
the plot
over
forward.
Our head. And then pretty much in that week, I was like, I'm going to go and meet him because I need to see if this is more than just a very extended stand-up comedy routine at this point. So pretty much the next day, that's when I booked my flight back to London so we could meet and see if there was something there.
And so how long had you been talking from the start to when you actually met up?
I reckon it was it's probably just some weeks, so maybe 3 weeks. So it wasn't long, but when you've spoken to someone every night, every morning for that long, and we'd FaceTimed and we'd chat so much, so it felt like longer. So yeah, I reckon it must have been like three or four weeks by the time I got back to the UK and we met up. I was getting a flight back. It was a 30-hour flight. I was going to arrive in about 5 a.m. in the morning and he was going to meet me there. And we were going to go, all right, let's go on our first date.
Wow. It's a long trek from New Zealand all the way to London where you're to meet this man that you've been talking to. And it's a long time to sit on the plane in anticipation, waiting to get there. Can you talk us through what that 24 hours is like when you're flying to the other side of the world to meet someone? You must be nervous, excited. What do you reckon?
Yeah, it's definitely a bit nerve-wracking. I don't really mind meeting new people, so it's not something that makes me, I love meeting new people and I like new situations. So that part didn't bother me, but there was still like that nervous excitement of, oh, what's it going to be like? Are we going to get on? Are we going to like each other in real life? It was kind of adrenaline and in a good way. Like, it was good nerves. I think it helped make the flight go a lot quicker as well. And then all I remember is when I eventually got to London, I was like, I need to find a bathroom to freshen up because I've been on a plane for 30 hours. No one wants to go on a first date when they've just been stuck on a plane for 30. No one comes off a plane looking their best. So yeah, I remember I was like, right, quick, find a bathroom, put some concealer under the eyes, try and fix the hair, spritz something onto me so I smell not like a plane. And go out there and yeah, also it's 6 a.m. by the time I see him, so you know I have to try and muster some kind of energy so you don't look like you're just dead in front of him, like, hello, I'm very tired but it's nice to meet you. So I had to try and get like a bit of energy going, and he wasn't there, that's the other thing, because the tubes weren't running yet. He'd miscalculated that. So I got to the place, I was looking around, I was like, I don't see him. So I was like, oh, maybe I've been catfished. It's going to be like an MTV crew coming out going, oh, it was this weird guy. It was all fake. And I was like, uh-oh. And then I think a little bit later, he appeared. So tubes were running a bit. And yeah, it was cool. We were very comfortable very quickly. Yeah, he was pretty much how I expect, especially because we had so many video calls, but he was a bit taller than what I thought because obviously you can't see that on video. And he'd been saying, what do you miss about the UK? Like, what foods, what drinks? And I was like, I love my juice. I was like, oh, do you know what? Just like a real nice apple capella juice. Just that would just quench my thirst. That's what I'm looking forward to getting back to. And some other foods I mentioned. And so he had a bottle of the juice that I'd said I couldn't wait to get back to in his hand, which I thought was great, much more practical than flowers. And also it helped me know exactly who he was. It's like, it's the guy with a massive box of juice in his hand. That's the one. Super, so then we got on the tube and it was super early and he's quite chatty as well. So he's like talking quite a bit because I think he had more nervous energy than me. So I think he was like overcompensating by being a little bit late. And I was like, all right, calm down, mate. These poor people in London are going on their commute. Like, they don't want to hear us all giggly and nervous excitement. So yeah, it was really sweet. But then we were like, right, let's, I needed a nap. But other than that, we had a bit of a day planned. So yeah, that's how it all started.
So when did you decide that it was something between the two of you?
Yes, so that's a really good question. We hung out for a week in London. So I even took him to see my auntie really early. We just had a few different things going on. We went to a friend's house. We just hung out, got to know each other a bit better. And then I had to go back up to Scotland because it was Christmas time and stuff. And so I was going to spend some time with my family because I'd been away for a couple of years. And I didn't know if I was going to go back to New Zealand. I could have done another year there or go back to Australia. I'd done my farm work in Australia, so I was eligible to go back for a whole other year. And so I was kind of not sure what I want to do. And he was in the same boat. He didn't know if he was going to stay in London or move back to New Zealand or go and travel somewhere else. So we were both in limbo. I went up there. He went traveling. I think he went to back to New Zealand to meet up with friends. And he went a few various other places. And so we didn't meet up again in person until must have been the following year. So like January, because this was the very, very end of 2017. And then we started kind of dating a little bit. But again, I didn't know if I was staying in London. He didn't know if he was staying in London. We knew we were only seeing each other. So we kind of knew that bit was serious, but we weren't official. And then he broke his leg skiing. And when he came back with a broken leg, I kind of helped nurse him back to health a little bit. And at one point he said, I don't know what to do, because if I do decide to go back to New Zealand and this doesn't work out, it's going to be really sad. So I don't want to say, oh, let's make it work, because then it'll be sad. And I was like, it's going to be sad either way, whether we say, oh, let's go, and then it doesn't work out, or we don't say let's go and it doesn't work out, it's going to be the same sad. So we may as well say, let's give it a go. And if it doesn't work out, that's fine. But at least we've tried. And he was like, oh, I've never thought about it like that before. So we were like, let's give it a go. Also, he couldn't run away because he had a broken leg. So it was very easy to get him to. No, it was cool. And we both kind of knew at that point. So we decided we're both going to stay in London. I got a flat kind of nearby. We hung out a lot, but I was super busy. I got back into comedy again. I was working on this show. So I was super busy. He was super busy. And then after about a year of us hanging out, dating, boyfriend and girlfriend, but still quite separate lives, we moved in together and had a great couple of years. Well, one great year, one COVID year where we were just locked in the flat.
Yeah.
And it was around that time that he thought, I really want to go back to New Zealand. And I thought, well, you know, we're not leaving the house in London. So yeah, let's do it. And we applied to move to New Zealand. So I applied for my partnership visa. So luckily I ended up back here, because I kind of had given up my opportunities to stay either in Australia or New Zealand to meet him. Mm. So I'm quite happy it worked out, because now I can live here, which is great. So yeah. But yeah, so that's been the 6 years that we've been together now, and of 7 years since we met on Tinder.
So how much of your story made up the show, comedy show that you did?
Oh, so much of it. In the end, so the story was supposed to be about how you shouldn't bow down to societal pressure to meet someone by a certain time, and then ended up being a love story about how I met someone. But it was still very, very playful, very silly. And because I did talk about a lot of the guys that I'd met at the dates that didn't go so well, and I also talked about our story and kind of what we thought might be next. So it was just a real silly show, but nearly everything in it is true. So even now I still do little bits of stand-up about that story, and I get so many people going, is this bit real? And I'm like, it's all real. I don't even need to write this at this point. I just have to remember what happened. So yes, it's all real. It's great. It makes my job really easy.
And Sammy, I was wondering, do you have any advice for other people that are trying to make a long distance relationship work, or at least in the beginning, like you did?
Yeah, I guess just, I know a few people now that have ended up in long distance relationships, and it's worked out really well. There was a friend of ours who met someone in a really similar way not long after, and had seen my show and knew Toby really well. And so she was messaging us going, I've met this guy, he's back in New Zealand, I'm in the UK, but we get on really well, what should I do? And we were like, just go for it. They got married last weekend. So I know so many stories like that. And then recently, because the story came out on CNN, I've had messages from people all around the world sharing their stories. And I had a lovely message from someone in America who met someone online. I think they were in Australia in 2002, which I feel like is very early days for the whole online dating thing. She came to New Zealand for a little bit, was in Australia, went back to the US, was married to him for 22 years, and sadly he'd passed away And she just sent me this message to say that reading the story of how Toby and I met just brought a lot of those memories back for her, and just she just reminisced. I know, it was so sweet. And so I've had a few messages like that. So I guess my advice is just, like, if it seems good, don't let the long distance part put you off. As long as you both want the same things, I think that's key. Because obviously I knew I was, in my story, I was looking for someone. I was looking for a husband. That was tongue in cheek. But very early on, I was like, what are your non-negotiables? And Toby and I discussed our non-negotiables. And we knew from day dot what they were. And mine was, you have to want a cat one day. You can't be a fussy eater. You have to eat, like, things like mushrooms. And the third one was, you'd have to want kids one day. And Toby said, I'm more of a dog person, but cats are fine. I'm not too fussy. Mushrooms are good. He was fussier than he made out, but he's actually got so much better, so it's great. He eats most food now. And then the third thing was, yeah, he would love to have kids one day. So we already knew that we were a really good match. Also, he's now the biggest cat guy because we got a cat 2 years ago, and she is his pride and joy. I've never seen. She just looks. He's now admitted after a few drinks. He's like, I'm a cat guy now. So I reckon non-negotiables at the start. Figure out what the other person wants, and if it's the same, and you can afford to get a flight, give it a go. But just also be safe. Don't put yourself in any unsafe situations. I knew he was who he said he was because I'd met his parents. I'd been to the fish and chip shop.
Yes.
So normally at this point of the podcast, we talk about what we learned, and you've sort of talked about a few of them, but what are some of the things that you've learned from this whole experience as a whole?
I think things can change. Life can change at any point, and you never really know when it's coming. And I was having a lot of fun traveling, but there was definitely parts of my life that I was not 100% happy with. And I knew that I did want some change. I knew I wanted to settle down. I knew I wanted to meet someone long term. I kind of knew that I just wanted to have a slower pace of life. And as soon as I started kind of looking for that and putting myself in a position where I could maybe find that, that's when it happened. This is another thing, because this story has come out and it's kind of come out before. I do get a lot of messages asking me for advice on how to meet someone. And I don't know the answer to that. And I know it's hard when you do want to meet someone and you don't. I totally understand it is. It's hard. But you never know when it is going to happen. So I guess it's just my life is so different to how it was 7, 8 years ago. So it's just enjoy what you have at the time. And you never know when things could go in a different direction. And you can start building towards that life whenever. And as soon as I put myself out of my comfort zone and started trying all these different things, yeah, all this fun stuff came with it. And I had so much fun as well. Like, I'm really glad I went through that regress partying stage. It was great. I got a lot of stuff in my system. But I also really like my very kind of, I have a very steady life now. I just come home and, you know, make the dinner and pet the cat and curl up on the sofa. It's so boring, but I love it.
Yeah. But look, if you don't regress a little bit in your 30s, are you even doing it right? Like,
exactly. Yeah, you've got time. You could do it. I could do it again if I wanted. Be 40 soon. Maybe I'll have another one, another big blowout. Maybe just before every decade, I'll just have a little blowout.
I think that's absolutely the way to go.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And it's all valid. It's all correct.
So, Tom, what did you learn from this story?
One idea I wanted to touch on was at the beginning of Samantha's story, she said she was looking around her friends' social media sites, right? They're for her friends' Facebooks or Instagrams, similar, and was comparing their lives to her own, right? And societally, we sort of advise, well, don't do that. Don't compare yourself to other people on social media because they're curating a very, they are curating a version of their life to put online for the rest of the world to look at. The advice is we shouldn't do that, right? Mm-hmm. We shouldn't compare your life to the very fabricated life that people are putting on. However, Samantha did this and found sort of inspiration or motivation to do something, to make a change in her life. And that's which forced her to write a comedy show, to meet people, to meet new people. So I guess in my lessons learned, it's trying to find where do we square the difference between copying or like looking at other people's social media profiles and actually, you know, living your own life and coming to your finding your own motivation and all that. What do you reckon, Liz? There has to be a gray area, a nice middle part where we one can happily play.
Yeah, I think that there has to be a healthy balance between basically comparing your life to something online, but rather than comparing and leaving it find wanting, comparing it and letting it spur you to something new is completely different, right? Because you're not making yourself sad.
Yeah.
So I think if you can look at social media and go, I want that, and you have it within you to go and get it, that's when it's good. Mm. And I think that when you say, you know, when you're comparing and going, oh, I'm sad that I don't have that, that's when it's not healthy.
Yeah. So if you can find, so if someone's posting nice vacations, say, don't be jealous of their vacations. Don't be.
Yeah. Find a way to book a vacation.
Rather than
being sad about it.
So don't look to other people's social media to mimic or to copy, but you can use it to in healthy doses, I suppose, to inspire you, your direction in life, what you want to achieve, what you want to get. There's probably some room there. Samantha, what do you reckon as we send a question over to you?
Yeah, I think that's also valid. And I do sometimes think social media, but it can come in other forms, right? That's just the reason it always comes back to social media is because that's where we get to see what everyone's up to. Whereas it wouldn't have been so normal back in the day that, you know, you wouldn't go and announce every single
thing
on the
little
town notice board and the same with social media. But sometimes it's an indicator. So if you look at something and it doesn't make you feel good, it might be telling you something about yourself. It might be saying, hey, the reason that this is making you feel a bit is maybe because you want to change something in your own life. And that can be a healthy thing, like when it inspires, but it also can be not a healthy thing. So yeah, I think it's just about a bit of balance. And I always say, and that's why I try and always do comedy that is about these things that I feel or pressure. I also did a show about how to find happiness in your, and it was about mental health, about how we see all these things about just being, at the time there was like a real wellness craze where it was like, you have to do all these things and you have to be happy. And I was like, why do we have to be happy? Like, just, we can be happy sometimes. We don't have to be happy all the time. That's very tiring. And so I love doing shows that go, hey, there's no pressure to do anything, but you should, to feel just how can we all make sure that we all feel better about our own lives and look after ourselves and make sure that we're doing the things that fulfill us. And Toby and I are not married. So that's the other thing. I tried to find a husband in a year, but we're not married. And people often ask us, or people call him a husband all the time because they just assume it.
Yeah, and we did it beforehand.
And it doesn't bother me because it's like, well, I don't actually need that. And it was never about that. It was never about the marriage. It's never about the husband thing. That was just a catchy title. It wouldn't have had the same ring to it if I'd said how to find a long-term compatible partner that you care about in a year. It just probably wouldn't have rolled off the tongue. So I often see that, or that people bring that up quite a lot. His mates bring it up a lot, but they just want a massive party. That's why they bring it up all the time. Yeah. And so I think that, there's no right or wrong way in anything, whether you're on your own, you're in a relationship, you have multiple relationships, you decide to get married, you don't, you have kids, you don't. I'm literally like, just everyone just do what feels good when you can.
It makes you feel happy.
Don't worry. That's what I'm just like, how can we just make sure everyone just calms down a little bit? Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about the comedy shows you have coming up, Samantha? Let us know where we can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. So the show that I'm talking about, I did a long, long time ago. After that, I did a show called How to Find Happiness in a Year. And then I did one called How to Win at Life. When I did How to Win at Life, It was because I thought maybe this will be the show to catapult me to success. It didn't. It was just before the pandemic and everything was shut down.
Ooh.
And so I'm like, I'm not going to do those shows anymore where I try and do something about my life. And so instead, I've now looked inward about my journey as a female comedian. And my latest show is called Female Lady Women Comedians. And I play five different women. We're all in a lineup show together. We're all different. It's all different parts. And it's about my journey through stand-up and how I gave up and then returned, and just kind of a little nod to the industry. And so it's really silly, horrific at accent. So you get to see me struggle through a Kiwi accent, and it's just a lot of fun. So I'm doing that in the New Zealand International Comedy Festival. I'm doing one show in Wellington. I did this show last year, so it's a repeat. So I'm just doing a one night only special that is nearly sold out. But I am also doing five nights in Auckland at Q Theatre, and that will be the 21st of May to the 25th of May. And yeah, it's a really fun, silly show. And I do, because I MC as me, not as a character, I still do talk about my story a little bit. And I do, although we're not married and I've said it's not a big deal and I don't mind, there is a whole section where I went on a hike with Toby recently to Tongariro Crossing. And when he didn't propose, I was like, that was a missed opportunity because that was the most beautiful day hike in the world. Yeah. And I have a whole section on that, which is so fun to do. And he just sits with his head in his hands, but he loves it really. So you still get a little glimpse of what I've been talking about in amongst different characters and a little take on the comedy industry and my experiences over the last 10 years.
We will put all of those details in show notes for you so that people know where they can see you.
Yes, readers in New Zealand, get along to Wellington, get along to Auckland to see Samantha's shows, please. I'm not going to tell you again. I'm asking politely once and that's it. That's all you're getting. Liz, did you have any little wrap-up thoughts of yourself before as we meander? You've happy with what we've covered in this little show?
I'm pretty happy with the lessons that we've learned so far. I think Samantha's done a really good job of covering everything that I was sort of thinking anyway. So
fantastic.
Thank you so much for joining us, Sammy. It's been an absolute pleasure hearing your story. And yeah, we're having a few audio issues at the moment, so that's why everything's a bit like weird and PC, but
No, we try, dear readers. We try. We've got Samantha in from New Zealand online via Zoom, although other applications are available. We do it all the time. We Zoom you in from around the world. So write in, send your stories to ghostsofboyfriendspast@gmail.com. We'll get you in a Zoom call and we'll make it work. Otherwise, we get you into the studio. We can do that if you are locale to Brisbane. As we meander around, send us your thoughts, send us your questions, send us your feedback to ghostsofboyfriendspast@gmail.com. We don't want just your stories. We want your advice. We want, I heard this episode from 3 years ago, and here are my thoughts and feedback on it thusly. So please let us know. Jump on Facebook. There's a little Ghosts of Boyfriends Past group therapy group where fans of the show, Liz and I, pop in, ex-guests from the show pop in, and it's memes, basically. It's meme central over there on Facebook. There's about 80% memes, 20% earnest discussion.
Good advice. Really good advice, especially from me. Great advice from me.
Fantastic advice from Liz. So we round of applause around the globe for Samantha today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great chatting to you both. I really appreciate it. And yeah. I'll be listening to the next one.
Wonderful. Great. And look, if you get on Tinder and you see someone that's a little bit further out of your comfort zone, my advice is just to go for it.
Yeah, like, why not?
Shoot the shit. Like, why not? Why not? You could end up with somebody that you end up, you know, being with for 6 years. You have absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain. And look, if anything else, it's just going to advance the plot. So.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There are known knowns, known unknowns, and unknown unknowns. But there are also unknown knowns. The ancient and esoteric order of the Jackalope is a secret society devoted to unearthing and sharing this forgotten knowledge. Each episode, we take one of these strange stories and share it with you. No topic is off limits, except for the obvious. Available wherever fine podcasts are sold.